Welcome to the Sermon Podcast for Northwest Baptist Church. We hope you hear from God in this week's message.
Our church's vision for this year is the kind of church we must become year two, and we're focusing on a church that stewards what God provides. I started this series in part one saying, if this is the kind of church we must become, then I want us to see where God has emphasized that this matters to him so that it becomes something that matters to us. In parts one and two, we surveyed the book of Haggai. First, we focused on God's view of how his people steward his provision and his priority. That is, how they treat what matters to him. And what we saw that mattered to him was the rebuilding of the temple. In that first sermon, we saw 3 points about what matters to God regarding his people and his place of worship. God cares about his place of worship. God cares about his people caring about his place of worship. And God cares about the manner of what his people do just as much as our obedience to him. Those were the 3 points from that sermon. We also learned in that first part, our first lesson in stewardship. We must care about what has been placed in our care by the one who cares for it. Then last week, we focused on how God called his people to examine their motives and effort and how they respond to stewarding his priority. From that sermon, we learned the second lesson in stewardship. We have to be good stewards of ourselves in order to be good stewards with what God provides us and us as a church. My hope is you truly did some soul searching after last week's message, and it will serve you well this year as well as serve our church well. This week and next week, we're going to pick apart the parable of the talents to see what we can learn about stewardship in general as Christians. Today, we'll just explore the parable itself. Next week, we'll finish the series by personalizing the parable with some practical application for us. So turn with me to Matthew chapter 25. We will not go anywhere else. We will just be in this parable. My advice is keep this open as I will refer to verses throughout it. Matthew chapter 25, starting in verse 14. Jesus says, "For it is," that "it is following what he had previously started, which would have been at the beginning of chapter 25, which is the kingdom of heaven. So, "for the kingdom of heaven is like a man about to go on a journey. He called his own servants and entrusted his possessions to them. To one, he gave 5 talents, to another 2 talents, and to another 1 talent, dependent on each one's ability. Then he went on a journey. Immediately, the man who had received 5 talents went, put them to work, and earned 5 more. In the same way, the man with 2 earned 2 more. But the man who had received 1 talent went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with him. The man who had received 5 talents approached, presented 5 more talents, and said, 'Master, you gave me 5 talents. See, I've earned 5 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Share your master's joy.' The man with 2 talents also approached. He said, 'Master, you gave me 2 talents. See, I've earned 2 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful with few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Share your master's joy.' The man who received 1 talent also approached and said, 'Master, I know you. You're a harsh man, reaping where you haven't sown and gathering where you haven't scattered seed. So I was afraid and went off and hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours. His master replied to him, you evil, lazy servant. If you knew that I reap where I haven't sown and gather where I haven't scattered, then you should have deposited my money with the bankers and I would have received my money back with interest when I returned. So take the talent from him and give it to the one who has 10 talents. For to everyone who has more, will be given, and he will have more than enough. But from the one who does not have, even what he has will be taken away from him. And throw this good for nothing servant into the outer darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. That is where we will end. Okay, so I'm going to start with clarifying two things before I actually jump into the purpose of today's message. So one, this parable is not directly about money. It is not directly about money. Money just happens to be the object. This parable is about stewardship. That's what it's about. Two, a talent is not currency. A talent is not currency or physical talents. I know we use this parable and we use it to apply or imply that we should be faithful with the things God has given us, and we often say talents. Then we go write the money. This talent here is not actually about physical abilities, nor is it about physical currency. A talent for a first century Jew was a measure of weight, like pounds, ounces, kilograms. When it says 5, 2, and 1, those are referring to 5 times, 2 times, and 1 time the weight of what is constituted as a talent. Scholars say a talent could be about 75 to 85 pounds. So now think about that. How many coins would you need for them to weigh 75 pounds? How many coins would you need for them to weigh 150 pounds? How many coins would you need for them to weigh 375 pounds? Exactly. A lot. So much so you probably couldn't count them. You just would do what with them? Weigh to make sure you got the right amount. That would be what this master gave his servants to steward. A weight, a measure of weight, with the coins being what filled in that measure of weight. So those are the two things I want to clarify, because as I move through expounding on this parable for us, I don't want you to have money in your mind. I want you to have stewardship in your mind. And then next week, we're going to emphasize the weight part, because I don't think we do a good job of weighing out the things that God has given us according to his measurement of weight. Okay. Now we can move to our focus for today. I believe Apostle Matthew gives us enough details from Jesus' parable for a layout of what biblical stewardship looks like. So the question we're going to answer is, in this parable, what did their stewardship look like, since it would be a general layout for biblical stewardship? Here's your first point. First was their role. Their role. They are servants. They served their master's agenda, not their own. The first part of what their stewardship looked like was their role. They are servants. They serve their master's agenda, not their own. This comes from verse 14. In verse 14, Jesus identified that there was only one master. And if you are familiar with his parables, or you should just go read them all, you will notice whenever his parable includes master and servants or master and somebody else, there's always only ever one master. That's for a reason. That's on purpose. That's intentional from Jesus, because there is only ever one master. And guess what? It ain't us. It ain't the people that he was talking to. That's what he was trying to allude to. So, Jesus identified that there was only one master. The others in this parable are the master servants. They belong to him and they work for him. These servants don't have servants, so they aren't surrogate masters. Their sole position is to serve their master's will and agenda as his stewards because he's going away for a while. So even though they are in charge of his affairs while he's gone, they remain in a subordinate position. And I believe that is a common unrealized tendency in stewardship. This is something that I think we do more often than we realize because of self-autonomy. Because you are in control of your decisions and often in control of the things in your care, in your possession. We assume we are then what? The masters, the people in charge. And we impose that on the very things that God has entrusted to us. So let me say this to us. To be a steward is to oversee another's affairs and possessions, but not actually be the one in charge. It is a paradox. You have the appearance of being in charge, but you have to consciously remind yourself, I'm not actually in charge. I'm the servant. I've been given charge by the one who actually has the authority and the position of being in charge. I've been given charge to take care of his things, but I'm not actually the one in charge. That may sound confusing, or it may sound like a conflict of interest, but it would only be that way for the person who hasn't accepted the reality of their role. If you struggle with being the servant, if you struggle with anything subordinate, then you will struggle with being a good steward. Because to be a steward is to not be the one in charge, is to be the one under the authority of who is in charge. To be the person in charge means you get to make decisions according to your agenda and preferences. To be a steward means you carry out the will and agenda of the person in charge that gave you stewardship over their affairs and possessions. So that's this first part. Stewardship, their stewardship looked like their role. They are servants. They serve their master's agenda, not their own. And as we saw, two of the three realized that and accepted that and flourished because of that. The second is their responsibility and ability. They were entrusted with their master's possessions, not their own, and what they were entrusted with was according to their ability. So the second is their responsibility and ability. They were entrusted with their master's possession, not their own, and what they were entrusted was according to their ability. I'm going to read verse 14 because I want you to notice this. So it says, he called his own servants, called them to himself, and entrusted his possessions to them. This belongs to me. I am now placing this in your care. Excuse me, that should actually be verse 15 up there. I have verse 14, forgive me. To one he gave 5 talents, to another he gave 2, and to another 1, depending on each one's ability. Notice that. First, these possessions belong to me. I'm placing them in your care. And then what I'm placing in your care depends upon your ability. The severity of their stewardship responsibility is that they are handling what belongs to someone else. And for them, it's not just anyone else. It's their master who has complete authority over them. They can't replace, they can't repair, and they can't repay what they have, what was given to them to take care of. So I want us to think about that for a moment. Because again, in order for us to comprehend what biblical stewardship is and then apply that to our life, we really do have to see ourselves as the servants in this parable. But that often means because we don't delve in talents. So that it means we have to put it in our context so we can say, oh, okay. So think about this with me. When there is no way for you to return something to the owner in the original condition other than the original item,
That would be like newborn babies. That is the reason why I do not hold newborn babies. Do you know why? Because if I break them, I can't repair them, and I can't repay them. Now, we can laugh because it's humorous, but I'm dead serious. You damage another person's baby, you know what they're going to do to you? I know what I'm going to do to you. So why in the world, if I know how precious and valuable and irreplaceable that child is, nope, I don't need to hold it. I'm cool. I'll kiss her for me. That's another thing, too. Stop putting your lips on people's babies. You got an adult immune system. They don't. Okay? That goes to that point, though. You break a newborn baby, can you replace it? Can you pay them? You pay the parents for? Nope. That's the same thing with the servants and the talents. The amount was too much for them to repay, restore, or return. Or a priceless heirloom. My wife and I have some china glass dishes from my grandmother. We will never eat out of those dishes. Those dishes are invaluable. Do you want to know why? Because it came from my grandmother. Next to Jesus, the greatest human being I will ever know on this planet. I don't care how fancy you are. I don't care how fancy this situation is. We are never touching those bowls and those plates. You break it, you can't replace it. You can go buy me another one. It won't matter. It doesn't have the same value. Do you see what I'm saying? That's priceless. An ancient artifact. They will put you in jail for damaging ancient artifacts. A winning Powerball ticket. Where's Carl at? We've had this conversation a couple times. Not that Carl plays a lottery. I'm not putting Carl out there like that. Although we all said if we could and it was that one chance to win, I would. You lose my Powerball ticket, you better run. You catching my point? That's an example, right? When there is no way for you to return something to the owner in the original condition other than the original item, how more cautious and careful would you be when they give it to you to look after it? That is the severity of the responsibility of stewardship, which then makes sense why Jesus says the master entrusted his possessions to them according to their ability. Would you give something priceless to someone who has displayed to you they are reckless and irresponsible? Probably not. That actually means you aren't that bright if you did that. Would you give an important task to someone ill-equipped for that important task? Probably not. What we see here is that some servants are given more because they have God-given abilities that allow them to handle more. Some servants are given less because any more than what they already have would be beyond their capacity to handle. In other words, stewardship is proportionate to one's ability. Stewardship is proportionate to one's ability. They only received what they could handle, not what they may have wanted, not what they thought they could handle. However, just because they could handle it doesn't mean that they would handle it well, which is the case with the last servant. Rather, it was that the master knew their ability and entrusted to each accordingly, not based off of preference or projection. What they could be. No. What they are now. What their abilities are now. What they can handle now. He gave according to that. And that's actually what's interesting about this whole scenario to me. Jesus is indicating that the master didn't set his servants up for failure. I'm going to say that again, and you put yourself in the servant's shoes. Jesus is indicating the master did not set his servants up for failure. Hence why the master said, "Well done," when two of his servants fully utilized their abilities with his possessions. "Great job, guys. You did what I knew you could do." But then, on the other side, we see with that last servant, when his stewardship is ignored, when good stewardship is ignored, that's what causes failure, not the lack of ability. I'm going to say that again, too. Because sometimes, you ready? Sometimes we bow out of things because we didn't do a good job with it maybe the first time or the second time or the third time. And then we think, maybe I don't have what it takes to get it done. You ready? That's an indictment on your master who entrusted that responsibility to you. The better question is, where did I fail in stewarding what I was given? Not, I don't have the ability. What did I do with it? Or did not do with it? That I disbelieve in the ability God has given me. That I disbelieve in the experience I've been fortunate to have. That I lack faith in trusting God to see me through carrying out his responsibilities. When we put it on, I shouldn't be doing this because blank, that's an indictment on the one who gave you that responsibility. Rather than what happened with the last servant, he just stunk in stewardship. That's what caused him to fail. Not the fact that he did not have the ability to be successful. Second part of what their stewardship looked like was their responsibility and ability. They were entrusted with their master's possessions, not their own, and what they were entrusted was according to their ability. The third thing we see from their stewardship is their duty. Third was their duty. They were to use what they were given and produce something from it. I'm going to read the verses where this comes from. This is 16, 17, and then I'm going to jump to 27. So 16, it says, "The man who had received 5 talents went," he left, "went about, put them to work, and earned 5 more. In the same way, the man with 2 earned 2 more, meaning the man with the 2 went about his way, put them two to work, and earned 2 more. And then go to verse 27. I'm going to look at verse 27. 27 says, "The master replies to that last servant, 'You should have deposited my money with the bankers, and I would have received my money back with interest when I return. You should have used it in this way rather than the way that you did,'" or in this case, "you didn't." If you notice in this parable, Jesus never relays the master telling his servants what to do, only that he entrusted his possessions to them. Therefore, it was unspoken but understood that there was a duty to use what they were given and produce something from it. So, with whatever vision they had, whatever creativity they had, whatever initiative they had, whatever willingness they had, with whatever go-get-it mentality they had, they did something with the talents they were entrusted until it produced something in return. Also, Jesus never says how long the master was gone. The servant simply worked until he came back. This means they had to persevere and overcome whatever obstacles they faced with what they were entrusted until it produced something in return. I'm hoping you're catching the theme here. They didn't waste what they were given. They didn't waste utilizing their abilities with what they were given. They didn't let the elapsed time cause them to suppress what they were given or the abilities they were given. They didn't abandon what they were to do, how they were to use what their master entrusted them and produce something from it. That is all except for that last servant. In verses 24 and 25, the last servant makes a comment that sounds like an indictment on the master and a justification for why he did what he did. Verse 24 says, the man who received one talent also approached and said, Master, I know you. Right there, that's an accusation. He's starting with, I know you. You're that guy. You're a harsh man, reaping where you haven't sown and gathering where you haven't scattered. So I was afraid and went off and hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours. I love what one commentary said, that if this servant was really afraid, then why would he have hid his master's money? Fear don't make you go and do something stupid. Maybe it does. Let me rephrase that. In this case, fear wouldn't make you be irresponsible. Fear would make you be more responsible because you'd be concerned about what your master would do to you. So that don't even make sense. Which means what? Oh, this really wasn't an actual indictment, and this really wasn't a valid justification. This was a disguised excuse for why he was unfaithful with what his master provided him. That is what this was. This sounds like a valid indictment, but it's not. Today we would call that blame shifting. That's what we would call it today. That's why the master responded with calling his servant evil and lazy. Not because the servant was right, but because he didn't use any mental effort to even consider depositing his master's money in the bank. Instead, he used his mental and physical effort to hide his master's money, which means this servant clearly had abilities. He just misused his abilities. Rather than him using his abilities in the vein of stewardship, he used his abilities in the vein of spitefulness toward his master. So let us keep this in mind. Jesus equates a clear lack of stewardship with spitefulness toward the one who entrusted you with what you have. Woo! The definition of spitefulness is to be petty. To desire some harm, to annoy, to frustrate, to desire to humiliate someone else. Jesus equates a clear lack of stewardship with spitefulness toward the one who entrusted you with what you have. That is not how we normally view or understand poor stewardship, is it? I don't think any of us would sit here and say, when I am misusing what God has entrusted to me, I'm doing that out of spite of him, in spite of him. We wouldn't say that, but Jesus shows in this parable, that's actually what we're doing. Because that's what this last servant was doing. The third part of what their stewardship looked like was their duty. They were to use what they were given and produce something from it, not make an excuse for why they don't. Their fourth part of what their stewardship looked like was their accountability. Fourth was their accountability. They gave an account for what they did with their master's possessions. Now, that's technically verse 19 through 30. That's really the accountability portion, because that's the exchange when the master returned and they had a conversation with the master about what they did with his possession. I'm not going to reread 19 through 30, but I will read verse 19 again. So it says, after a long time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with them. That's interesting. Settled in for this, in this context, is not, hey, let me reconcile what I gave you and what you made from it, like if this was a banker. This is, hey, I'm coming to check on what you did with what I gave you charge over. They had to report what they did or didn't do. That's this accountability here. They knew their master was coming back, and they knew he would want to know what they did with what he gave them to steward. So their decisions on what they did when how they steward his possessions were with this accountability in mind. My master is returning and he's going to want me to give him an account. This is why they were ready to give a report when he returned. They wanted to show their master they took his charge seriously and used their abilities for his benefit. And this is actually the good motivation of accountability. It keeps us in check and on task. In Matthew's account, he includes Jesus alluding to this at the end of chapter 24 in verses 45 through 51. I'm going to read that for us. So Jesus says in Matthew 24, verse 45, "Who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his master has put in charge of his household to give them food at the proper time? Blessed is that servant blessed is that servant whom the master finds doing his job when he comes. Truly, I tell you, he will be put in charge of all his possessions. But if that wicked servant says in his heart, 'My master is delayed,' and then he starts to beat his fellow servants and eats and drinks with drunkards, that servant's master will come on a day he does not expect him and at an hour he does not know. He will cut him to pieces, Lordy, and assign him a place with the hypocrites where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." So in Matthew's account, he runs this final sermon from Jesus together. Jesus talks about the end times in the beginning of chapter 24 and then goes into these particular parables in chapter 25. He runs them together. Matthew is doing that on purpose. That's with intent, okay? So if Matthew says that in this parable of Jesus with the parables, that the servants knew they were going to have to give a report, an account to their master when he returned, but then he says in the previous chapter, oh, let me give you another example of what happens to servants, to good servants and wicked servants when the master returns. That's on purpose. Jesus is trying to communicate to us all the motivation of accountability. If you know the master is going to return, then whatever he placed in your charge, do well with it because you got to give him account. Don't think that his delay meant, you ready, for the last 2,000 years or within your 70 years of life means you will not be held accountable for what he gave you charge over just because he didn't return during your time. That's that wicked servant or the servant that chose to hide his master's money. So that's the fourth thing here. I do have one more for y'all. Recognizing that an account will be given with what was entrusted is good for effective stewardship. Recognizing that an account will be given with what was entrusted is good for effective stewardship. This keeps you in going in the right direction for the duration you have it. Knowing that we will have to give an account with everything we say, and everything we do should 100% influence what comes out of your mouth and what you do with what abilities you've been given. Because it's not like we're talking about a human master who could be deceived by our eloquence, who could be deceived by our appearance of us doing work. We're talking about the sovereign master who knows our thoughts and our intents. None of us are going to be able to be like, yeah, but he's going to be like, fool, don't forget I created you. Let's not forget who you're talking to. The fourth part of what their stewardship looked like was their accountability. They gave an account for what they did with their master's possessions. These four are how the servant stewardship looked. This would be a general layout for biblical stewardship. Role, responsibility, and ability. Use what you've been given to produce something, and accountability. Now, the master's response to his servants show us what's on the other side of stewardship. which simply corroborates what we've already looked at in the first two parts, in Haggai, in Revelation, and in 1 Peter. There is a reward for stewarding well or a rebuke for stewarding poorly. Now, I don't want to focus on the rebuke, excuse me, because I feel like last week was enough. You had a whole sermon on self-examination, and I don't want to focus on the rebuke part. I just want to quickly address the reward because I believe the reward part is more impactful. The reward for the servants who stewarded well was twofold: more responsibility and being able to share in their master's joy. That was the reward for the servants who stewarded well. The joy makes sense as a reward, but that more responsibility might not be viewed as a reward to everyone. Because more responsibility sounds like what? To some of y'all, more work. But that would be the wrong heart to hear it from. Servants in tune with their master would understand that by the master giving them more responsibility, this means he trusts them to handle more. The master's confidence in his servants is the ultimate reward. A master's confidence in you infuses your confidence. A master's confidence in you can infuse a better work ethic. And a master's confidence in you makes you happy. This is your next point. More responsibility is the reward of a greater confidence in the servant from the master. More responsibility is the reward of a greater confidence in you from your master. To a servant, there is no better reward than to hear from their master, "Well done. You were faithful with my things. Now I can entrust you with more of my things. Come and enjoy the fruit of your labor with me." Don't perceive, interpret more responsibility with being more work. Receive and interpret more responsibility when it's coming from God to you as a sign of his confidence in you. And I say that as someone who doesn't always like the responsibilities that are placed in my care. That is where I land when I find myself in seasons. It could be a day, it could be an hour, it could be weeks, it could be months, where I'm begrudging the responsibilities placed in my care. Especially when those responsibilities hinder me from doing what I want to do. Hopefully I'm not talking about myself right now. Like y'all also can say, yeah, I fall into that camp too. Where I land is, but you've given this to me, one, for your glory, but two, because somewhere in there, you know I could do it. Even if I don't want to do it, and even if I don't think I'm good at it. You know I can. Well, if you know I can, then I can. So help me. Help me get it done. Otherwise, take it from me, because I'd rather not fail in what you've given me. I'd rather you take it from me. And yet, keep giving me more. Some says you like, well, maybe I should stink so he could take some things away from me. But that would be bad stewardship and a sign of spitefulness toward my master who entrusted his things to me. More responsibility should not be seen as more work. It should be seen as more confidence from your master. And that should infuse you with confidence and with joy. Man, Jesus really trusts me if he placed this thing, his thing, in my care. I'm going to go ahead and wrap up. Since Jesus used this parable to teach about the kingdom of heaven, that's how it started, he was communicating to his disciples that these parallels are true of him and them. I love in earlier in Matthew, the disciples ask him, why do you keep speaking to us in parables? Like, can't you just say it plain? And I love his response. Parables are for those that have ears to listen. The goal is not for you to be mentally lazy and check out. The goal is for you to think, who is telling me, what is he telling me, and why is he telling it to me? It must be about him and me. And then because he was there with him, they could ask him. And praise the Lord, Matthew wrote him down so that we could see his answers to these parables. He was communicating to his disciples that these parallels in this parable are true of him and them. He is the master, and whoever follows him is his servant. He is on a journey, and he is about to go away for a while. What did he say about the master? For a long time. None of us know when Jesus is going to return, but here's what we do. Here's what we will feel like. It's been what? A long time. He is leaving them in charge of taking care of his possessions until he returns. There is no retirement in Christianity. You never retire from being a disciple. Which being a disciple means you're also a missionary. You never retire from the mission, from being on mission. You never retire from ministry because God gave you gifts and abilities to build up the body of Christ. You might retire from leadership, but that doesn't mean you retire from being a leader, from being a person of influence. Are you guys following me? You never retired from stewardship. Because so long as you have breath in your lungs, your heartbeat, and your brain still work, guess what you're the steward? That breath in your lungs, that beating heart, and that brain that works. There is no retirement in Christianity. I don't care how old you are. I don't care how broken you may be. I don't care how young you are. There is no retirement in Christianity. Because if you are here, you alive, and you're his, you've been granted something, entrusted something from him to steward. And you're going to have to give him an account. And you're to do it until he returns. Or what happens? You die. He was leaving them in charge of taking care of his possessions until he returns. Fourth, they are to be good stewards of his things, making advancements with what they can according to their abilities, and be ready to give an account of what they did or didn't do in his name. Those servants didn't operate in their own name with their own money or their own authority. They operated in their master's name with their master's money and their master's authority. Same is true for us. And then lastly, Jesus, will be fair in his reward or consequence. For example, two of the three servants, though they had different talent amounts, 5 and 2, both received the same reward. This means their reward was based upon their good stewardship, their faithfulness, not what it produced. And thus the one servant's consequence was based upon his wastefulness, his poor stewardship, his unfaithfulness, not because of what he didn't produce. That's what makes the reward and the consequence fair. Also, because there are more good rewards in this parable and thus more good stewards in this parable and thus more rewards were given, this means that is the greater emphasis, the reward, not the consequence. Hence, Jesus is indicating to his disciples there is more he wants to entrust to his disciples and a joy he's excited for them to experience with him, which will make their labor more than worth it. That's why he gave 2 good stewards with 2 rewards and 1 wicked. He wanted his disciples to hear, oh man, you really want us to focus on being good stewards and the reward that comes with being faithful. But know that there's a consequence if we assume that you will reward unfaithfulness. What a great parable on the charge and the hope of being Jesus' stewards while we await his second coming. I pray you heard what you needed to hear about your stewardship as a Christian. Now, we are in a series, The Kind of Church We Must Become, a church that stewards what God provides. So, how does this apply to our vision this year? That would be our third lesson in stewardship. We must be intentional, attentive, and resourceful with whatever God entrusts us with because we are answerable for it. We must be intentional, attentive, and resourceful with whatever God entrusts us with because we are answerable for it. Whatever we have individually and collectively as a church is not by accident. So let us not treat it like we have it by accident. Whatever we've earned individually and collectively as a church is not without God's permission. So let us not treat it like we got it without God's permission. That is, we can do whatever we want to do with it, like as if we're the master or the owner of that thing. And then whatever we do or don't do individually and collectively as a church will not go unnoticed. So let us not act like what we do and don't do will go unnoticed by our master. The third lesson in stewardship is we must be intentional, attentive, and resourceful with whatever God entrusts us with because we are answerable for it. I'm going to end with what the writer of Hebrews says in chapter 6, verse 9 through 12. I think this is fitting as a bookend for this sermon. He writes, "In your case, dear friends, even though we speak like this, we are convinced of better things relating to salvation. For God is not unjust so as to forget your work and the love you have demonstrated for his name in having served and continuing to serve the saints. But we passionately want each of you to demonstrate the same eagerness for the fulfillment of your hope until the end, so that you may not be sluggish, slothful, lazy, but imitators of those who through faith and perseverance inherit the promises." May we heed God's word for his church. Amen. Worship team, you guys can come. I know for this particular message, the subjects were the servants. And along the way, I tried to incorporate us in it, but we weren't, it wasn't directed toward us per se. From the sake of the service in the parable. But my hope is that you did what I encouraged, which is you put yourself in the servant's shoes and you heard it directed towards you, even though I focused and I used the terms, I used more general terms, they, them, servants, et cetera, maybe not so much always you. Again, next week, that's what we're going to spend more time on, but I didn't want you to check out because I didn't pointed directly at us the whole time. The goal was for you to put yourself in their shoes and you receive it and apply it where it fits. Last week, we examined ourselves. Today, I ask that we measure our stewardship with what we've seen in this parable. And then let us respond to God for his faithfulness to give, his faithfulness to forgive when we steward poorly, and his faithfulness to reward with more when we steward well. May you all respond to the Lord as you see fit.
Thanks for tuning in today. We'd love to have you come worship with us in person at 300 Westminster Road, Reisterstown, Maryland, 21136. Also, be sure to check out our church's website at nwbcmd.org to find out what else we're doing and how to get plugged in.